Please be seated.
Good morning. Anything arising overnight? Good. All right, so we're in your hands, Mr. Reed.
Thank you, Your Honour. So firstly, just to signal how I intend to deal with the supplementary material for Mr. Davering.
Yeah.
So overnight, I took time to reflect on the matter with Mr. Davering in the light of Your Honour's comments from yesterday, and we think the best course is to withdraw the statement, but to cover the critical points that he wants to make, just in some supplementary questions.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's fine.
Yeah, yep. So there, I think it's, okay. It became apparent trying to edit the document last night that it was going to be a problematic exercise. So I think that's the best course.
I tend to agree. I've had a look at it now, Dr. Davoron's dealing with more matters than explaining the schedule and where we've got to with the schedule. He's now taking that forward for his client. And
I mean that
certainly needs to be done, but possibly not at this stage, or probably not at this stage, whilst those matters are afoot.
Yeah. Well, we can come to it, Your Honour, but the critical thing from his perspective is that he's moved on from the notion that any allocation should be based on a 9 and 10 year demand scenario, and he's comfortable with an alternative scenario based on historic use, but he needs to explain that.
Yeah, I tell you what I was really interested in, both from Dr. Davril's first brief, that on the brief that I'm now to put out of my mind, having read it, was how this actually works with the client scheme, where you know the scheme's run by a raceman.
Yes.
Yeah, and I was quite interested to see how the methodology is employed there, or again, that could be left for expert conferencing with a, you know, as part of one of many scenarios where the method will roll out. So I don't mind where that is done, but I was interested to see how it works with schemes such as this.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honour. So I have some submissions, Your Honour, which I had intended to provide to the court in advance of today, but I needed to revise them somewhat last night after the discussion that occurred. So these submissions are made on behalf of Strathclyde Water Limited, MacArthur Ridge Vineyard Limited and Mount Dunstan Estates Limited. These parties are all associated with the vineyard development at MacArthur Ridge, which is referred to in these submissions and by the three parties' witnesses as MacArthur Ridge Vineyard Development. Each party made separate submissions opposing PC7. The reason for their opposition was inter alia concerns that the outcome of PC7 as notified may have led to a reconsenting on terms that could have resulted in an uncertain and inadequate supply of water to the vineyard development. This in turn may have led to economic impacts on the current operations and planned future development. Additionally, the MacArthur Ridge parties, in particular MRVL, was concerned that it might be precluded from completing the development of the vineyard and the necessary additional irrigation pursuant to long-held plans. The MacArthur Ridge parties are members of ORUG and raise similar matters to ORUG in their written submissions on PC7. However, the MacArthur Ridge parties are now not opposing PC7 in its entirety. Rather, in my written submissions and in the evidence filed and presented today, the MacArthur Ridge parties are seeking technical amendments to the controlled activity rule and in particular Schedule 10A4. These amendments primarily relate to the mechanism for determining rates of take and new daily, monthly and annual volumes. Additionally, the MacArthur Ridge parties seek amendments to the controlled activity rule to allow increased irrigation area in very limited circumstances. The overall purpose is to advance amendments to PC7 and Schedule 10A4 that will result in an acceptable outcome to the, for the MacArthur Ridge parties and others in their position. The evidence today is directed at explaining the MacArthur Ridge Vineyard development, the importance of water use within the MacArthur Ridge development and the viticulture industry more generally. In his evidence in chief, Dr. Davern discusses the potential consequences of the application of Schedule 10A4 as notified for the availability of water to the vineyard. Dr. Davern favoured a demand-based mechanism for determining monthly and annual volumes, 9 out of 10 years. Since evidence in chief for MacArthur Ridge was filed, Dr. Davern has further reflected on changes to the controlled activity mechanism. He favours amending the schedule as proposed in the joint witness statement produced following the primary witness conference. Dr. Davern intends to address this in supplementary questions. I note that for some other submitters who had initially opposed PC7 in its entirety, the issue of scope has been raised. I will address the scope issue for the amendments MacArthur Ridge is seeking later in these submissions. The MacArthur Ridge Vineyard development is located in central Otago near Alexandra. It was established in 2002 to produce high-quality Pinot Noir grapes. The vineyard was planted. The vineyard has a planted area of 183 hectares with a further 54 hectares serviced for additional development. I will come back to the relevance of this unplanted area later in these submissions. The land within the vineyard development is owned by several entities but is run by two vineyards, Mount Dunstan Estates and MacArthur Ridge Vineyard. The water used across the vineyard development is managed collectively via SCWL, Strathclyde. SCWL is not a permit holder. It obtains water on behalf of shareholders from the Manuherikia Irrigation Cooperative Society Limited, sourced under deemed permits by the society. Producing high-quality grapes in central Otago is demanding. The climate is harsh, the region is arid, with many vineyards receiving only half the annual rainfall of vineyards in Marlborough during the growing season. Frosts are frequent and can cause catastrophic damage to crops unless frost mitigation methods are successfully implemented. At the MacArthur Ridge Vineyard development, using water for frost fighting is the only effective frost mitigation method. Water use for frost fighting has a particular duration and seasonal profile, which is different to water use for irrigation. For these reasons, having a reliable and adequate supply of water for irrigation throughout the growing season and an adequate supply of frost fighting water during frost-prone shoulder seasons is critical to vineyard operation. If the outcome of PC7 was an inadequate or unreliable supply of water, or a supply of water in volumes that were inadequate to allow for frost fighting peaks, the impact on business in terms of lost production could be very significant. The effects of any compromised water supply would extend beyond the business itself. The vineyard is an employer. It provides viticulture services and to other vineyards in the area, and it is a significant consumer of local and New Zealand sourced products and services. Turning to the controlled activity rule and the schedule, the purpose of PC7 is to provide a cost-effective interim planning framework to facilitate an effective and efficient assessment of resource consent applications to replace deemed permits for take and use of water, in particular via the controlled activity pathway. This is to allow for an efficient and timely transition to a new land and freshwater management regime. ORC has confirmed that this is a process-based plan change. The intention is to provide a holding measure allowing existing activities to continue for a short period. Dr. Davern has completed a detailed technical analysis of the outcomes of PC7 for the MacArthur Ridge Vineyard under Schedule 10A4 as notified, relying on data from SCWL. It is recognised that this is a notional exercise because SCWL is only one water user in the Manuhira Care Irrigation Scheme and is not a permit holder. However, Dr. Davern says that, as Dr. Davern says, the analysis is applicable to all irrigators with an allocation from the scheme and to the Manuhira Care Irrigation Cooperative Society itself. The application of the schedule to SCWL operation would severely restrict availability, water availability for both irrigation and frostfighting in drier and or more frost-prone years. As notified, Schedule 10A4 contains key methodological flaws and unnecessary limitations on the selection of data. These are discussed by Dr. Davern in his evidence in chief. For clarity, I touch on two key matters in these submissions. Firstly, is the five-year period of data and the difficulties with averaging. In addition to these technical and methodological issues with the schedule, there is one outstanding issue with the controlled activity rule itself, which I will address. Rule 10A3.1.13 restricts access to controlled activity pathway to circumstances where the total area under irrigation has not increased over the maximum area irrigated between September 17 and March 2020. This rule would represent a significant and unnecessary limitation on the MacArthur Ridge development. Five-year data period. Schedule 10A4, the Schedule 10A4 methodology relies on a five-year data set for calculating water use. 2012-2017 in the notified version and 2015-2020 in subsequent iterations. For SCWL, these years are low or very low irrigation demand seasons. So the selection of these years would not be a fair representation of historic water use and would result in a supply of water that was unreliable. Dr. Davern recommends that the maximum available data set is used. He cautions, however, that there is no guarantee that the historical data available to an applicant will include high demand seasons. However, for SCWL, there are high demand seasons available on the record. Issues with averaging. A further issue with Schedule 10A4, as notified, is the reliance on average values to calculate the rate of take in daily, monthly and annual volumes. The water use profile for a vineyard is different to other primary industry users. In the viticulture industry, the application of water for irrigation is meticulously planned and managed. Applying the right amount of water to the vines at the right time is crucial. If insufficient water is applied, this will result in stunted growth and reduced grape yields. However, overwatering results in quality problems with the grapes. Mr. Rasmussen, Dr. Jordan and Dr. Davern all discuss the methods that can be adopted to ensure water is used efficiently. During frost-prone seasons, spring and autumn, the biggest use of water on the MacArthur Ridge vineyards is often frostfighting. Frostfighting requires a high volume of water to be applied at one time and often over a long period. The timing of frost events is unpredictable and a run of cold weather can result in spikes in volumetric demand at times of low demand from other users. Seasonal and yearly demand for water can fluctuate significantly depending on the requirements for irrigation and frostfighting in the particular year. Dr. Davern's evidence is that it is not satisfactory, not statistically sound, to apply an average to these fluctuating demands. As Section Schedule 10A4, as notified, does. Again, these issues are exacerbated by the short 5-year and unrepresentative data set used for averaging in the notified version of the schedule. Using an average value also fails to provide for situations where the irrigated area has changed during the relevant period. If the irrigated area was increased in the relevant period, then the actual use prior to the expansion may not be reflected in the current requirements for water. For example, in the case of MacArthur Ridge Vineyard development, 8.2 hectares of vines were planted in 2020, bringing a total planted area to 183 hectares. However, irrigation use for the periods prior to 2020 would only have reflected requirements for the 174.8 hectares planted at the time. Changes in the irrigatable area. The controlled activity pathway, as notified, is restricted to applications that demonstrate that the total land area under irrigation does not exceed that irrigated in the 2017-2018 irrigation season. Following submissions, the ORC proposed an amendment to the period in the rule to the maximum area irrigated in the period 1 September 2017 to 18 March 2020. This provides some relief for irrigators who increased their irrigated area between 2018 and 2020. However, it does not address the issue where irrigation infrastructure is already in place but was not used prior to 18 March 2020, or where the costs have already been incurred in relation to investment irrigation infrastructure. The Council's proposal to provide an alternative discretionary pathway alternative discretionary activity pathway for persons in this category has been abandoned for the reasons discussed in Mr. De Pulsemaker's supplementary evidence of 14 March 2021. At paragraph 14D of Mr. De Pulsemaker's supplementary evidence, he indicates that it is unclear whether the matter he had tried to address through the restricted discretionary pathway is widespread or rather theoretical. He indicated that in his view it would be up to the parties to demonstrate whether this is a real issue. In my submission, the MacArthur Ridge Vineyard is a relevant example of the difficulties created by the area restriction. Decisions about the design capacity for dams, pumping equipment and piping network on the vineyard were made as the vineyard was established in 2002. The infrastructure necessary to provide water to the planned full development of 237 hectares was installed in between 2002 and 2004. A total of 183 hectares has been planted and irrigated to date, but a further 54 hectares of development utilising the existing infrastructure was planned for the future. Attached to these submissions are proposed amendments to Policy 10A2 and Rule 10A31, which seek to address the issue the MacArthur Ridge parties face. The amendments expand on the controlled activity pathway where additional irrigation area is planned and has been committed to by way of existing infrastructure. The amendments set a high threshold as to what constitutes an existing commitment. An existing commitment involving the completion of all horizontal piped infrastructure for the planned irrigation is required. So, that proposal, Your Honour, is attached as the appendix at the back of the
right. So that's submissions. Thinking overnight.
It is, yeah. Your Honour.
Okay,
yes.
No, that's very helpful.
Okay.
Okay. So the amendment would exclude parties still in the planning stage of a proposed development. The pathway would only be available to those with heavy infrastructure already complete. The amendment recognises that the horizontal piped infrastructure is one element of an irrigation development that is not generally able to be staged.
Meaning what? I mean, Dr. Davin can talk to that, but
he
meaning that, that normally comes at the end of a development rollout, or was it something else?
Well, typically, my understanding is that if you that it doesn't make any sense to stage your piping network. You really do that at one go because it has to be a certain size. The whole network has to be certain size.
Yeah.
I mean the parameters, the diameters of the pipes and so on, and then it's very hard to sort of, to add on to a buried horizontal infrastructure. So what developers tend to do is they do all of the horizontal infrastructure at one go, and then the remainder of it, which is the surface infrastructure, so the actual planting and the if it's pivots, or in this case. The infrastructure for the vines that comes later, but a very large part of the cost goes on the underground piping network, and behind the piping network, as I understand it, I mean, you have to have made decisions about size of dams, size of pumps, everything else. Everything else sort of flows from the establishment of the piping network.
Okay, thank you.
So turning to relief sort and scope, the issues of scope have arisen in relation to some of the relief sought by parties to these proceedings. I have reviewed the legal submissions of Council for the Otago Regional Council in relation to scope, and agree in general with the principles summarised in paragraph 17 to 24 of those submissions. In my submission, the key principle is that a decision maker is not limited solely to the relief specifically sought in the submissions. The relevant relief does not need to be expressly sought in the original submission. Rather, the question is whether the submission as a whole fairly and reasonably rises some relief, expressly or by implication, about the identified issue. The principle is usefully set out in the Environment Court's decision in Campbell with reference to the High Court's decision in Countdown Properties. Does Your Honour wish me to...
I can read that to myself, and just can give us a couple of minutes.
Yes.
Do you want me to keep reading to the end of the beginning of paragraph 42?
Yes.
Okay, well,
so
I'll do
I can't, that. Yeah. It's all quote through until paragraph 42.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
So, yep. Thank you. All right. Yes. Continue reading from 42.
From 42. Yep. SCWL, Mount Dunstan Estates Limited and MacArthur Ridge Vineyards Limited all made submissions on PC7. These submissions were in each case drafted by a lay representative of the party themselves rather than by a professional advisor. Each of the submissions opposed PC7. In summary, the following issues with the plan change were identified. The plan change does not recognise recent water use because it only looks at average data from 2012 to 2017 irrigation seasons. Development undertaken in the 18-19 and 19-20 season is excluded from consideration under the plan change framework. The plan change does not recognise or provide for different types of water users and their efficiency of water use. The methodologies in PC7 will result in a reduction in actual allocations with no environmental basis for this approach. The plan change takes a blanket approach to all of the expiring water permits rather than applying a catchment-specific approach. The work done to date by the water users group to collect catchment-specific data has been ignored. Having a certain long-term supply of water is crucial. The issuing of short-term consents will stifle economic development. So points E and G have been pursued by other parties at this hearing, in particular OREG, and are no longer pursued by SCWL.
So it's points E, F and G, or just E and G?
No, so E, yeah, so E to G.
E to G, okay.
Mm-hmm. The focus of these parties is on issues A to D, specifically the promotion of amendments to PC7, in particular the schedule, so that the plan change achieves its purpose of providing an interim holding position whereby existing activities can continue with a reliable and adequate supply of water. In particular, this involves adopting the following changes to the schedule identified in the primary sector expert witness conference. The change to the calculated rate of take and daily, monthly and annual volumes relying on the maximum values rather than averages, and the change in to the use of every full year, July or 1 July to 30 June the following year, of available verified water data, not data for the limited 5-year periods as included in the notified version of PC7 or the updated version of 14 March 2021, the adjustment of the area limitation in policy 10A21 and rule 10A31. So those are the three crucial changes. And I acknowledge that none of the three submissions specifically requested the changes to PC7 that are set out in paragraph 43 above under a heading relief sought. Rather, the issues are raised and discussed in the general narrative of the submission. However, the amendments as set out above in my submission squarely address specific issues raised in the submissions. In my submission, therefore, the amendments sought fall reasonably and fairly within the submissions filed in terms of Campbell. However, should there be any dispute about that, I have reviewed the other submissions on PC7. In my submission, it is my submission that there is a clear jurisdiction for the amendments supported by the MacArthur Ridge parties can be found in the submission of Manuhirakea Irrigation Cooperative Society Limited and the submission by LandPro. And I've set out the relevant extract from the Manuhirakea submission at 49, which I can wait for Your Honour, the Court, to read.
And it.
Yes, and yep. And then at 48, the issue of the limit on the irrigation area is discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And then at 49, I just note that the land pro submission also discusses these issues in detail at 50 to 60 of the paragraphs 50 to 60 of their submission.
Mm-hmm.
So turning to the evidence to be called for the parties I represent, there are four witnesses. Norman Elder, who'll provide an overview of the MacArthur Ridge Vineyard development and the role of SCWL and their importance in terms of local district and national economy. John Rasmussen, who discusses the Mount Dunstan estate business and why it is crucial for the business to have a reliable supply of water. Dr. David Jordan providing expert evidence in relation to the wine industry in New Zealand and Central Otago and how water is used in the viticulture industry and specifically on the vineyards at MacArthur Ridge development. And Dr. Tony Davern providing expert evidence in relation to hydrology and the implications of Schedule 10A4 to the SCWL group. So of those witnesses, Mr. Elder will go first. Mr. Rasmussen is largely sole charge on his vineyard, and he's in the middle of harvest. So I've arranged for him to come straight after lunch.
All right. Well, firstly, has Mr. Moore got any questions for him? That might be good to know.
It depends on whether Mr. Elder can answer some questions about the infrastructure.
Yeah.
It may well be that I don't. Very limited questions from me, and my questions are really about understanding the current setup and the infrastructure that has been put in historically. Mm. And it may well be that Mr. Elder can answer those questions such that I don't need to pursue them with Mr. Rasmussen.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder whether we might see where we get to.
No, that's fine. Yep, no, that's fine. And the questions that I have are questions around the exercise of the deemed permit, albeit that this company doesn't hold that permit, but it's held by another. And then just pressing into the relationship with Manahitakia Irrigation Company. How does that work? At a sort of a broad overview helicopter level, so I can get a better understanding of the relationship between farmers and the irrigation supply company. Quite interested in exposure to deemed permits expiring in October, whether there is any exposure or any consequence to your reliability of supply at MacArthur Ridge. I don't know whether that witness is the best witness to ask those questions. Who would be?
Well, Mr. Elder can cover some of that, and Mr. Davern actually has a working knowledge of some of that as well.
Okay.
Dr. Davern. So the arrangement with these parties is that Mr. Elder is the chairman of the whole group, or the water Strathclyde group, which is the water management entity. Mr. Rasmussen is the Mount Dunstan Estates principal, so he doesn't have, and that's a much smaller entity than the MacArthur Ridge Vineyard Limited group itself. So he won't be able to answer many questions about the nature of the infrastructure on MacArthur Ridge because he's a much smaller part of it. So to the extent that referring to my learned friend Mr. Moore's questions, query as to who would be best to answer questions, I think the answer is it's Mr. Elder to the extent he can, filled in by Mr. Dr. Davern's working knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But in any event, I'm happy to see where we get to.
Yep.
Mr. Rasmussen is available and is scheduled to come. So.
Okay, all right. Very good. All right.
So So the first witness that I call is...
Sorry, just see if the Commission's got questions.
Oh, sorry.
Well, yes. I just wondered who we could ask about the drafting of this
drafting provision,
because I do have some questions about it.
Oh, we don't have a plan in front of
you.
Somebody
drafted it.
Yeah, no, do you have questions around the horizontal infrastructure, or do you have questions about the effectiveness of the provision?
Well, the first question I have is about the policy and whether it has already committed to what does that mean, and is that
in ground, or
is that different from what then is proffered?
Yep.
And then I have a similar question in relation to the rule, and so I'm just rather unclear about what the drafting might mean, and I don't actually know who I can ask these questions.
No, that's the problem with not. That's the problem with not having the planner, a planner here, so that we can ask questions. But you've drafted this.
Yes, I've drafted it.
And is it broader than, in fact, the effect of this drafting actually broader than the problem that is put in front of us?
So the court is interested in the topic of stranded animals.
Yes.
And your this is your response to that topic.
Yes.
And there may be drafting issues, and the question is, who then do we ask questions of clarification? Now, it could be that these are... that, in fact, it's appropriate to ask you because the policy reflects the ambit of alternative relief, if I can put it that way, which MacArthur must pursue in order for its assets not to be stranded. So we could ask you questions. But I guess my thinking, and I haven't talked to my commissioners about that, is if this thing has merits, we might send this as a subtopic off to that expert conferencing, which is already... fingers crossed happening, to happen informally, but if the schedule's not landed, then formally with Commissioner Dunlop. So this might be another mini topic that we send, but inviting actually planners with a wider brief than simply those involved in the schedule, planners who've also got an interest in the stranded assets question. So that's where we could perhaps land it. If it's got merits, Mr. Moore?
My friend was kind enough to share the thinking late last night, and I can say the council planner has had a chance to review the provisions, albeit briefly, and he certainly has some questions and topics that he would like to explore with the right person. the challenge here, of course, is... there's no planner representing this interest. It's helpful. The starting point is it's helpful. It's a live issue, and it's an issue that, as I signalled yesterday, the council is interested in exploring to see if there's a solution available. It doesn't open the door too wide. I would have thought that some conferencing would assist, noting that other planners have also attempted to solve the problem, and that wording certainly has some flaws in it, as far as I'm concerned. So where to from here? It may well be that MacArthur Ridge might find a representative or a planner who might be able to assist with that small task. It's not a small task, it's a complex task, but the issue over the drafting, because it strikes me that here is an actual example with the investment, the infrastructure and the ground, having that view represented in the room is important. I mean, the alternative is that Mr. De Pelsmaker has sat and listened, has seen the wording here, understands the factual situation, and he can hold that in mind as the drafting discussion occurs.
The other example being Mr. Webb's farm.
Mr. Webb, correct.
And it strikes me that he also has horizontal infrastructure in the ground as well.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
All right. Webb being a party to Hort NZ.
Yes.
Yep. So in case you were interested in...
Mr. Webb, Your Honour?
He's a cherry farmer, an orchardist anyway, and Hort NZ was pursuing an RDA for the same purpose. I think it was an RDA. For the same purpose, stranded assets. But the wording had implications which had not been thought of and was teased out during cross-examination. So this is another route into the problem. So if we haven't discussed it, we've only just seen it, but if it's got merit, that might be a small topic that we could, because we're not opening up the major topics for conferencing at all.
Right.
You know, the major topics being should applications filed to date be processed as on their merits, either under the water plan, the regional water plan that is now operative, or some draft of version of this plan. So we're not opening up that question. That's for the court to decide. And if that has merits, then we'll release an interim decision and probably again refer back to expert conferencing. But these are small but crucial topics which could, I think, be referred to expert conferencing. So with that in mind, we're going to ask you a couple of questions,
yes.
I think, so that we understand where you're coming from or the meaning of words, and you'll have to consider, if it is referred, putting a planner into that process, somebody who can represent your client's interests around those words. So the first, just looking at your proposed policy amendment, what does the words or phrase "already committed to" mean? Does it add anything to the balance of the sentence?
No, it's only intended to be people that have established all the all necessary horizontal pipes for the additional irrigated area. It's not. It doesn't add anything to those subsequent words, so it could potentially come out.
Mm. Yeah, so it might look like all necessary horizontal pipes for the additional irrigation area have been installed. So that might be another way around it. So the words
are... It would be a useful simplification, I think.
Yeah.
On reflection.
Okay. Okay, so the phrase doesn't mean anything. Doesn't add anything. And a simplification could be, but it needs to be thought about further. Commencing after the where you commence in your tract words, or where all necessary horizontal pipes for additional irrigated area have already been installed.
Yes.
Yep, okay.
I think that would be a good simplification of it.
All right. Okay, and does it? And then that seems to follow quite neatly in the rule. Commissioner, have you got any questions?
Okay. Yeah. I think David has
The use of the term horizontal pipes, when they put the local distribution system in, maybe there'd be horizontal pipes there as well, but I don't understand this, how it all works, but... There may be more horizontal pipes to come.
That might be a useful question to ask Dr. Davern, what I tried to do with the rule was just reflect what I understood to be both the situation that was on the ground at MacArthur Ridge, but also what typically happens with these types of developments. So, and that understanding came from his factual experience of how these developments do work.
We can ask him.
Okay. Yes.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner.
No, I think that can help.
That help?
Help with the
good.
Policy. Yes.
Okay. And the rule?
The rule doesn't look too bad, but we're going to send it off for
someone
we'll
send
to
it
look
off. So as long
group
as we,
to look at.
Okay.
They can tease out whether or not there's any issues.
All right. So nobody has any objection in principle to sending this as a subtopic off to the planning conference, which seems to be growing a little bit. Mm. OK. Okay. All right. Good. Mm-hmm. Will do. You're looking a bit.
Oh, no, I'm quite. You're good. Quite comfortable with that.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Very good. All right. So your first witness.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honour. So my first witness is Norman James Elder.
Yes, that would be fine. I do. Thank you. Thank you.
Your full name is Norman James Elder.
Yes.
And you're a lawyer, and you've been in practice since 1982.
Yes.
And you're a partner of AWS Legal.
Yes.
And you were appointed in October 2020 as an independent chairperson for the Strathclyde Water Limited.
Yes.
And, Mr. Elder, you have prepared a brief of evidence, which is dated 3 February 2021.
Yes.
And do you confirm, to your, the best of your knowledge and belief, that the contents of that brief of evidence are true and correct?
Yes, I do.
Now, as part of that statement of evidence, you have completed a summary. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that's in paragraphs 9 to 12. So could you please read that summary for the court's benefit?
Strathclyde Water Limited is a company established to own and manage the water supply infrastructure utilised by vineyards in the MacArthur Ridge viticulture development. Strathclyde Water Limited draws water from the Manuherikia Irrigation Scheme for use on the vineyards, which contain a current planted area of approximately 183 hectares and a further 54 hectares serviced for additional development. The vineyards are important contributors to the local and wider economies. The vineyards provide employment to a number of people, purchase New Zealand-sourced equipment and plants, utilise local grape processes to manufacture their own brand wine, provide viticultural services to other vineyards in the area, sell grapes to New Zealand wine producers, predominantly for the export market. If the outcome of Plan Change 7 process is an unreliable or insufficient water allocation for the Strathclyde Water Limited vineyards, the viability of current operations will be uncertain. Future grapevine planting, for which infrastructure was installed many years ago, will not be viable. Current initiatives for which planning is underway, including a new winery and development of a 40-hectare wetland, may not be able to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Elder. Could you just remain, please, and answer any questions that my learned friend may have or that the court may have?
Certainly.
Mr. Moore, do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Your Honour. Good morning. I wonder whether you can help me understand the situation in relation to the existing infrastructure that has been established on the broader, I was going to call it the MacArthur Ridge property, but I appreciate there are a range of properties. I'm interested in the irrigation infrastructure that was originally installed back, I think, in the 2002 to 2004 period of time. Are you able to assist me with that topic?
To my limited knowledge, yes. The water is taken from the Manuherikia scheme. It's pumped up onto the MacArthur Ridge vineyards.
I wonder whether we might, just as we go through this exercise, you had appended a map or a plan to your... Gee, there was a better map somewhere.
That map doesn't necessarily describe where the pipelines and things are.
Might have been...
Dr. Deborah may have a better map than I have.
Sorry. Was that Mr. Rasmussen's evidence which had... a plan. I wonder whether the witness might be shown a copy of the plan attached to Mr. Rasmussen's evidence. It might assist with just explaining. Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Just precisely where you're speaking about. Mr. John Rasmussen.
Which page are we on for that?
Page number 3. Mr. Rasmussen. Page 3.
So the water leaves the Manuhiri Care catchment up and pumped up through pipes up into the various ponding network, and then from the ponding network it's fed into large pumps which then pump the water to the various underground pipes that lead to the infrastructure for the disbursement of water.
So with reference to figure 1 on page 3, I see there some arrows MICSL race, so that's the point at which the turnout from the irrigation race is located?
To the best of my knowledge, yes.
And then the water flows from that point. So looking at this map, the turnoff is located at that point. Where does it then go next? It
goes into the stored in the ponds.
Right, so there are 3 ponds on the property. Is the water gravity fed to one or other of those ponds, or is it pumped, or how precisely does it work?
To my knowledge, I think it's pumped to most of the ponds, particularly the top pond, and then it goes from there to the pumps.
So when you say the top pond, are you referring to the pond labelled Main Pond?
Main Pond at the top of the Springvale Road.
And in terms of the pumping infrastructure, and tell me if you're not familiar precisely with the detail, I might put that to somebody else, but
I have seen the pumps and the large pipes that go into the ground, but where it goes after that, I think Dr. Devron would be better to describe that.
Right.
I understand this court will also be doing a site visit, and we'll get a better understanding and appreciation of that network.
So there are some pumps, as far as you're aware, somewhere down where these arrows MICSL race right-hand side, and then a series of pipes, as you understand it, to one or other of the ponds. Do you have any understanding as to the size and capacity of the pipes, or is that straying beyond?
I think that is beyond my knowledge.
Right, so the water gets from the race to the ponds, presumably through some pipes, and then dispersed from or distributed from the ponds through another series of pipes?
Pipes and then to the pumps.
So where are the pumps located? Are they beside the
pumps
pond?
The pumps are further up the road towards the main pond.
Just from a geographical perspective, the top pond, as you described it, that's the of the pond with the highest elevation?
Yes.
Yes. And does all water cycle up to the top pond before it goes through then the distribution system?
That was my understanding.
So from that main pond, then there are some further pipes that, well, there's some pumps at that point or somewhere along the road, I think you said.
Beside, not far from the pond, there are the large pump sheds. And then they put those pumps disperse the water through the various other pipes to the various vineyards.
So in terms of the infrastructure that's already in the ground, that series of pipes services obviously all of the existing established vineyards?
That is correct, yep.
And then in terms of what provision's been made to undeveloped blocks, so here's a portion of land yet to be planted or fully developed, can you describe for the court the piped infrastructure in relation to those properties? So what's in place?
There's a further 54 hectares to be developed and planted. As my understanding is the pipes, the main pipes that take the water to those properties is in the ground, and then what remains is the sprinkler system on top of the ground. So the major infrastructure is underground now.
So in relation, and I wonder, do you know, with reference to this map, where the undeveloped 54 hectares, I think it was, is it dotted around, or is it...
Look, I'm sorry, I could not answer that. I think Dr. Devron would be better to answer that question. But I think there is an area, I'm not sure if that's the shaded area I'm looking at, where the further vineyards can be planted.
Okay. So in terms of your knowledge, you understand there to be an irrigation, I'm going to call it an irrigation main, which runs to all of the properties, including the properties that haven't yet been developed, and the last piece of irrigation infrastructure that is developed when the vines are planted is the above ground.
Is above ground.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the planting, does that irrigation go in before or after or at the same time as the planting occurs?
Well, when you plant, I'm a layperson in that respect. I consume wine, I don't grow it. The irrigation systems or the sprinkler systems will be put in at the same time as the rows of vineyards are put in.
Now, you have some understanding as to the operation of Strathclyde Water Limited?
Yes.
And in your evidence, you describe how the water is allocated to each property owner with reference to the area of the property actually planted. Now, I'm interested to understand the water right and the way by which the allocation occurs on the property. So as I've read the evidence, Strathclyde Water Limited takes water from the Manahitakia irrigation scheme. And are you or do you have any knowledge or understanding of the underlying water permits that exist with respect to the allocation of water for these properties?
Each landowner has a quota, a water quota share, depending on the plantable area. In the Manahitakia Incorporated Society, that share entitles them to a water flow, not a volume, but a water flow based on litres per second. And that water is then made available to Strathclyde Water Limited for disbursement through the various networks.
So as properties come online, so as planting occurs, is more water made available from the irrigation company?
The water allocation now is sufficient for the additional, for existing water application, for frost fighting and for irrigation and for the additional 54 hectares.
So when you think about that allocation and you think about the water that is currently used, is another way to describe that that the full allocation is not currently being used on the property?
It depends on a season. The allocation that's been granted is suitable for the full 237 hectares. Depends on the season whether that water would be utilised or not, and Dr. Devron would be able to explain that perhaps better than me.
Okay. Do you have any understanding of the underlying water permits held by the Manahiriki Irrigation Scheme that give rise to the subsequent allocation to Strathclyde Water Limited?
They're old historic mining permits that are now deemed to be water permits, and the water is taken from the Falls Dam at the top of the Maniototo and then is dispersed through a race that follows through the valley towards Alexandra.
And in terms of those underlying permits, when do you understand those to expire?
They expire this year.
In terms of the infrastructure that was developed on the property, were the three storage dams developed back in that 2002 to 2004 development window? Or did
I could not answer that.
What year does your involvement stretch back to?
2020.
Right, so you're very new to the very new to the party. I'll ask some other witnesses about the timing in relation to the storage. Thank you. No further questions.
Questions? All right. Re-examination.
No, nothing further, Your Honour.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner, do you have any questions?
Questions.
Okay. Just got some questions again around the relationship between your company and Manahiriki Irrigation Co. You say each landowner has a water quota share, which provides an entitlement to water flow, not volume. And you're nodding, so that's yes for the record.
That is yes.
Okay. So, and that's set out presumably in a contractual agreement between Strathclyde and Manahiriki?
The Incorporated Society for the Manahiriki Scheme has rules around that. If you're going to take water, then you have to have a share in the Manahiriki.
It's a share in the company.
In the you have to have a share in the Manahiriki Incorporated Society.
Incorporated Society.
There's a schedule, I think, with the various allocation of shares.
Mm.
And then the various landowners have to have a share in Strathclyde Water Limited in order to take or receive the water from Strathclyde.
And how does one go about acquiring a share in the Manahiriki Incorporated Society?
It's a very good question. I haven't been involved in that, but I would imagine that it would depend on the allocation of water, if it was available, because they would know how much they can take out of the Manahiriki stream, or water race, sorry.
Do you have to buy into the incorporated society to acquire a share?
I imagine there'll be a consideration payable.
Okay. You take by flow, not by volume. Do you know the reason for that?
I imagine that would be historic, Your Honour. I couldn't give an explanation as to why.
And do you know whether or not that flow can be reduced at times of low flow or subject to other permits?
I'm relying on the very first glance of the rules of the Manuhiri Irrigation Society, and I think it can be under review.
By under review?
Under review, so each, if there is a dry season and the water, there's less water in the race, then there would be a reduction in allocation.
Are you familiar with the term flow share agreement?
No.
No, okay. Do you know how many shares there are in the Manuhirikia Incorporated Society?
Sorry, I need the schedule of the society with me to give you that answer. It is publicly available.
So I'm not particularly familiar with incorporated societies, but the term share means what? I know what a shareholder is in terms of a limited liability company, but not so much a society. Can you assist me there?
I think it's if when we talk about a share, there would be so much water allocated under its permit, and then you would receive a share of that allocation, and so that would be the so-called share.
Yeah, so it's a share of the allocation.
Correct. Yes, it doesn't have shares as we know it. In,
no, granted in the deed permit. Yeah. Okay. All right, well, those are my questions. Anything arising from the court's questions? No?
Can I just ask one question?
I was a little bit confused in your evidence between there are two vineyard companies, is that right?
Mm. Yes.
And but then you've used a sort of an overarching thing about MacArthur Ridge Vineyards. Is that right?
Yes.
And in Para 10, you've got some areas there, 183 and a further 54. Is that for both of the vineyards, the combined areas, or is it just for one vineyard?
It would be for, I would imagine, the combined area. It's always been discussed as further development, but primarily, I think, MacArthur Ridge Vineyard Limited.
Because you said John Rasmussen's going to give some details on the Mount Dunstan, the Dunstan one, is it?
Yes.
So when you come to Para 25, is that, again, is that both vineyards or is it just the MacArthur Ridge Vineyard?
That would be, we talk about the MacArthur Ridge Vineyard development as in Both vineyards?
Combined. Okay. I was just a wee bit confused whether...
I couldn't give you the exact breakdown between the two vineyards.
That's okay, as long as it's...
Primarily, I think it's MacArthur Ridge Vineyard.
Because the heading says MacArthur Ridge Vineyard, so that's... It's not MacArthur Ridge Vineyard,
No,
is it?
It's the development.
It's the total development.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that. Thank you, Your Honour.
All right, very good. Anything arising? Thank you very much for your evidence.
Thank you.
So the next witness is David Talbot Jordan.
Doctor, yeah.
Your full name is Dr. David Talbot Jordan.
Yes, it is.
And you hold a PhD in viticulture from Oregon State University, United States.
Yes.
And you've been involved in the grape and wine industry since 1983. Your original expertise was as a viticultural scientist with the Ministry of Agriculture and Horticulture from 1989 to 1994.
It was.
In 1994, you established Vine to Wine and have gained significant commercial expertise in relation to the grape and wine industry since that time.
Yes, I have.
And you have prepared a statement of evidence dated the 4th of February 2021.
Yes.
Do you have a copy of that document in front of you?
I do.
It's an electronic copy.
It is. Yes. I'm happy to go with a hard copy.
No, that's fine. So can you, for the court's purposes, confirm that the statement of evidence that you've prepared is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
It is.
Now, as part of that statement of evidence, you have a summary from paragraphs 13 through to paragraph 15. So could you please read that summary for the court's benefit?
I will. A reliable supply of water in sufficient volumes is critical for the sustained commercial performance of premium vineyards in central Otago. MacArthur Ridge Vineyard is a good example of a modern vineyard that has invested in optimising the water use for its operations. During the process of reviewing the water allocation under any plan change, the following should be considered for vineyard entities. Irrigation water is critical to support the productive performance and wine quality. Irrigation is required every season. The most important and dependent time for water in vineyards is during the unseasonal dry periods or droughts that occur infrequently and need to be factored into the allocation of water for vineyards. Without sufficient irrigation, vines will experience declining yields and inferior wine quality. The viability of a vineyard will quickly be jeopardised. If vineyards have chosen to use water for frost mitigation, then water needs to be available for this purpose. Without this water, reliable frost mitigation is not available and the vineyard performance will suffer and potentially jeopardise the viability of the vineyard business. Failed vineyards will have many direct impacts on the regional and national economies through the lack of expenditure within the region and revenue generated coming into the region and at a national level as export earnings. Another direct impact is the employment created in the order of 1 full-time equivalent per 3.5 to 6 hectares of vineyard. Failed vineyards also have indirect impact on the regional businesses that service the vineyard and wine industry, like irrigation and machinery maintenance providers, fertiliser and fungicide suppliers.
Thank you, Dr. Jordan. Could you please remain and answer any questions that my friends may have or the court may have?
Mr. Moore. Thank you, Your Honour. Good morning, Dr. Jordan.
Good morning.
You mentioned in your evidence that failed vineyards have an indirect impact on other regional businesses, including fertiliser and fungicide suppliers. And I'm interested to understand the fertiliser application in a vineyard. Is that something that you would be familiar with in terms of an understanding of vineyards, including in central Otago?
It is.
Can you describe the fertiliser application regime that occurs on a vineyard?
Now, the fertiliser application of a vineyard is based on, is typically, I'm going to talk in a generalised way, is typically based on three key factors. They are an observation of the soil nutrient level, so through regular soil testing. Then the second is on testing the vine itself, so taking tissue samples of representative vines to determine the nutrient level in the vine. And then there's also the role of observation to determine through either visual symptoms or ill thrift or performance of the vines, and some of those can be key indicators of nutritional position or characteristics of the vine. So with that information, fertiliser, the application of fertiliser is considered. So if the vine is healthy, the tissue levels are normal and the soil levels are normal, no fertiliser may be applied. So it's not an annual application as you may think of in a typical agricultural situation. So it's based on largely objective information and some subjective assessment of the vines. So taking that information, when nutrients are deemed to be insufficient, then a fertiliser plan will be created. Out of that, a range of options are available to the vineyard owner or vineyard manager, and that's through the application of solid fertiliser, so the application to the soil, and that can either be broadcast or directed to the planted vine row, and can have an incorporated or just applied to the soil surface. A second approach is that which we would term fertigation, so where the nutrient required for the vines is added to the irrigation water. So we've heard described today the pump sheds, so often at the point of reticulation for the water, and that can be within the pump shed or remotely from that within the vineyard, nutrient is injected into the irrigation to be applied via the irrigation system. So in a vineyard that's targeted within the irrigation lateral tubing that's along the vineyard row, so as the water is applied, nutrient contained within the water is now applied to the vines. The third approach, and that is we have a regular canopy spray program in vineyards, and that's primarily for the control of fungal diseases that can impact on the performance of vines. That gives us an opportunity to also apply nutrient via foliar application. So in the spray wagon, nutrient can be applied alongside the fungicides to also apply nutrients in small amounts on a regular basis to the canopy, so directly applying it to the vine, particularly to the leaves and then to the vine.
And what types of fertiliser would you consider to be typical in terms of central Otago?
It's always challenging with a generalised... The I'll start with a premise that the nutrient requirements of vines is very low compared to other fruit and agriculture pursuit on the land. So we're dealing with a low demanding commercial crop compared to anything else that we could be considering. So with the context of low amounts, the nutrients that would typically be applied are the macronutrients, which are nitrogen, phosphate and potassium. Magnesium is often applied because it's an important element for grapevines, but then not excluding elements like calcium. And then we move on to the micronutrients, and there are some micronutrient deficiencies in Central Otago that can be adjusted. So we're thinking of zinc in particular.
When you think about the application rates, you noted that compared to other types of agricultural activities, viticulture is comparatively low. Are you able to put any further detail around that? And
well, obviously it's an area of sensitivity about the application of nutrient, where that nutrient may end up. If we focus on the macronutrients, those that would most be likely added in large amounts, we're talking in the order of 25 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year.
So staying with nitrogen, do you or have you any experience with then modelling whether any of that nitrogen leaches below the root zone?
That has been, as I mentioned, a sensitive topic throughout New Zealand and has received a lot of attention and various regulations in place to restrict agricultural activities and minimising the impact on waterways. Our industry has invested extensively in its understanding throughout the regions, and particularly in Marlborough, where the majority of our industry is located. And because of the very low amounts that are applied by our industry, there are very low to nil detected levels of nitrate that have been, to my knowledge, from that work that was completed over a number of years, attributed to vineyard activities.
I want to shift on to phosphates and their application. Is it common to have to apply phosphorus in vineyard?
It's a lot less common. As a nutrient, the base levels, I'm going to talk generally again, are at a reasonable level. Some of the soils here in Central Otago, because of the various nature of having history of gold mining and other activities, the nutrient level does need to be ameliorated by the addition of phosphate. But typically it's not a regular addition, and it would be an adjustment prior to planting and then very infrequently thereafter.
Do you ever see or are you aware of situations of any runoff, noting vineyards are often planted on slopes?
Now, as I said, because our application rates are so low and being targeted to the vines themselves, the evidence of runoff, I've personally seen no evidence of runoff.
Thank you. The second topic I was going to explore with you relates to your paragraph 40, subparagraph A, and there you refer to the irrigation infrastructure in place. Now, please tell me whether you're not particularly familiar with the precise detail of the infrastructure layout on the MacArthur Ridge development, and I'll pursue that perhaps with Dr. Davern, but what's your level of understanding?
My level of understanding is based on two aspects. I was involved in the original assessment of this property for the vineyard development back in 2000, I think it was. So that's hazy memories. But in the early phases of that vineyard development, I was associated with and understand aspects of, and I'll look to Tony Davern for the some other detail, but I remember the extensive development and the scaling of pumping main lines with lines at the time talking about the mainline pipes of suitable size to enable the complete development of the vineyard. So that's when in discussion of seeing the plan up before, So we'd call it the headworks. They're right at the dam, and the original pumps that were installed and the pipes were all sized to the full extent that was planned for the vineyard. So the diameter of the pipes at the where the water originates for disseminating or distributing through the vineyard is scaled for the whole vineyard. So it starts from the dam sizing to the pump infrastructure and all the elements within the sheds associated with the pumps, filters, the size of the pipes, the size of the valves, everything's now sized for the ultimate size of the vineyard. You can't go back and retrofit the piping for something you've now added on at a later stage. And then at the extremities of that system, and that is fresher memories because I was on site late last year, and not aware of the significance of paying attention to the new vineyard, but that was planned. I was shown that the main lines were installed within the area to be planted in the future. So that is the extremity now, but it's effectively the end of the supply pipeline is in place to be tapped off for or where the lateral and further in the above ground, I think we're talking about today, piping is to be installed to.
You used a word headworks as part of that description. Does, when you think of the headworks required for the development, does that include the irrigation main lines?
It does. Well, it's the attachment to the main lines. And the aspect of this development, because with frost protection, all the vines, every square metre of that vineyard, the water is being applied at the same time when you're frost fighting, which is different to a solely irrigation setup where the water can be cycled on a daily basis. So it may be zoned into, let's pick a number, 24 zones. So every hour the water could be cycled around. So effectively you're sizing, and this is beyond my true expertise, but just from observation, your sizing of pipes and pumps is scaled back proportionally. In this case, this vineyard is 100% protected by overhead water for frost protection. So the water, the whole vineyard is irrigated effectively at the same time with large volumes of water.
So I had a question about the frost fighting. That was always intended when this original works were done?
It was, because in that original assessment that I performed back in 2000 and a range of considerations was looking at the extent, the frequency and the extent or how hard the frosts occur in that area. And it was deemed at that point to be beyond what we could effectively protect by the methods of air movement, either helicopter or frost fan. And water for frost fighting was the only option that enabled that vineyard to be established.
And in terms of the original planning and development, did that include the three storage ponds? Were they part of the plan at that stage?
Certainly the takeoff dam and then the main pond, but then I believe the second pond was phased after that.
Do you have any understanding of when that second pond came to be?
Sorry, I don't know the exact dates.
Okay, perhaps Dr. Davern can assist me with that. That's been helpful, thank you. No further questions.
Thank you. Re-exam. You got any questions?
I just had one, and it might take me a minute to find it. This, your paragraph 24. Where you, perhaps you could just expand a little on what you mean in terms of that paragraph.
Just to be sure I'm on the right, paragraph 24?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
so that's, I guess it was painting the picture of a vineyard development. So it's not like an annual crop where you sow the seed and harvesting within 3 or 4 months. A grapevine, it's a 5-year horizon before you get to full production. The first 2 years are effectively establishing the vines. The third year you get small production. I normally plan for 60% of full production. 90% in the fourth growing season, and then by the fifth growing season, the vines are now in full production. It's really looking at the lead time for and the capital spend and the lead time to get to full production.
So that's in terms of the vines that you've planted.
The vines you planted.
5 years.
Yes, it's a 5-year development to get a vine up to sufficient size to now carry a full production crop.
And in terms of the water demand, does that fluctuate over the growth period
over those
5 years?
It phases both on vine age and then within the growing season. So as a young vine being established, the root system is very shallow, and oscillating moisture levels around that root system will either enhance or retard vine growth. So the water demand is very high with young vines, little and often to support the vine in its early establishment. As the vines get older and the root depth and volume gets larger compared to the top, the water use stabilises within the vineyard. Then the demand for the vines is driven by a number of factors. The canopy that's grown on those vines is effectively an evaporative surface. So the water, the moisture within the vine is evaporating from the surface of the leaves. If you have, as is experienced down here, warm winds of some strength, that increases the evaporation loss from a grapevine canopy, and the vines lose water much faster. If it's combined now with hot temperatures, it's amplified even further. Now, the vine has a range of mechanisms trying to protect itself from water loss, but under those severe, harsh conditions, the water loss is greater typically than what a grape vine can obtain from its root system. Our supplementary irrigation is trying to compete with that water loss through applying water via the drip line to get down to the root system and being taken up by the vine. We overlay another factor. So we've got a growth phase. That canopy starts as little short shoots with very few leaves, and they grow. So the water use is mirrored the volume or area of the canopy. Now we've got the developing berries on the vines that also provide a load and demand on the vine and influence the water use. And we see a peak in water use because of the developing crop and, as fate would have it, aligning with typically the driest and hottest time of the year, which is around February in this part of the world. We have the highest demand from the yield that's on the vine and the water loss because of the conditions that prevail. And so we see a peak water use during the summer period, January and February, and then it tapers off in the shoulders either leading up to that period or after.
And frostfighting?
Frostfighting tends to be in the opposite ends of the season. So it's in the spring and the autumn. Our main frostfighting season is in the spring, and that extends from when the buds are just emerging through to when frosts don't occur. And sadly, I tell many of my clients down here, you're lucky to get away without a frost in January. So we're thinking of frostfighting in every month bar January. So October, much higher frequency of frost. November, less, but there are likely to be frost. We have fought frost in December up to Christmas. Typically, we get off in January, and now we're on frost watch February, March. Less so in the autumn and late summer and autumn period. But we can be frostfighting, and frequently we are frostfighting, while we've still got grapes on the vines waiting for them to harvest. So at that point, we're protecting effectively the horsepower on the vine to ripen and develop flavours and enable the fruit to be ripe and in a condition that our winemaking clients will accept the fruit. So we need to protect the leaves to enable that fruit to ripen and be in a commercial state to be harvested at the end of the season.
And so that involves the application of the same amount of water for
it
all
does.
Of the frostfighting activity?
The physics it seems always counterintuitive. You apply something like water and it freezes, and that's protecting your crop from frost. But it's the physics of changing, the phase change, you actually get the release of heat, which protects the tissue where that ice is built over, built upon. The challenge for people like my colleague is that we need to predict when the strongest or the hardest frost, and what would that be, and the amount of the rate of application of water to protect against that. So you gear up your infrastructure to be applying water at that rate. And it's very difficult to run overhead frost protection at a range of rates. You have a fixed rate that the water goes out and applies. So when you turn the irrigation on for frost protection, it's running at a rate that's predetermined because of everything that you've set up to run that system. So if you're running the frost protection in the spring at 5 millimetres an hour, it's 5 millimetres an hour when you run it in the autumn as well. The only piece that you get to vary of any extent is the duration. So when you turn it on and when you turn it off. And that's dictated by, as the temperature declines, you have a trigger temperature to turn it on, and then through the frost and out the other side, you're waiting for that frost, the ice that's built up, to effectively, the conditions warm enough to melt that. And then you can stop running the frost protection at that point.
And I just had one final question of clarification. As you talked about the end of supply pipeline, and then you went on from there to talk about where the lateral and the above ground to be added.
Yes.
My question to you is there a difference between a lateral and above ground, or did you...
I've added extra words in there describing the same. So there's a takeoff that rises up from the subsurface, submain and main, our horizontal infrastructure, I think we're talking about now. So you have to tap into that for the lateral tubing, which is the tube that runs the length of the grape row where the water is now distributed within the grapevine row.
That's above ground.
There is a slightly quirky element to this in that we're now applying that same lateral tube subsurface in some situations. But I think for clarity and simplification in this consideration, the lateral is running along the grape row, typically attached to a wire that's 30 centimetres off the ground, so above the ground.
Okay, thank you for that clarification.
Oh,
I don't have any other questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Questions?
Yeah, if I can just ask, in terms of this frost protection, paragraph 50A, you talk about the water applied for frost protection offsets the water required for irrigation, right?
So which paragraph, sorry?
50A, sorry, on page 14.
Yes.
You got that there? And then at 54A, you talked about Dr. Davering concluding that the proposed changes have not considered the use of water for frost mitigation. Could you just talk a little bit more about how the water for frost mitigation assists or offsets the water required for irrigation?
Oh, irrigation. If we come back to my description of the seasonal water pattern, and particularly when frost water could be applied, and at the volumes we're talking here. So let's paint a picture of five frost fighting events in the spring, and we say the last frost fighting event is the first week of December. So we've fought four times. We're applying a lot of water over, and in average it could be 60 hours of frost fighting in a growing season. So up until that point, in the end of the fifth frost fighting event, we've applied considerable amount of water, and it just doesn't evaporate. It's now landing on the vines to provide our frost protection, but the large volume of that is actually hitting the soil and now building a reservoir of water in the soil, which now is available for our vines for the subsequent period. So if we come back to my last frost protection in the first week of December, second and third week of December, the irrigation requirements for those vines has been met by the frost protection water that's been applied in the beginning of the same month. Whereas if we hadn't frost fought, we would have been applying water via the lateral tubing to meet the irrigation requirements. So there is a substitution between the volume of water we apply for frost protection and the irrigation requirements, meeting the irrigation requirements of the vines. So even though it's described as frost protection, which was its primary reason for application, it also serves to satisfy the irrigation requirements for a period post-frost event.
And does the farmer, call him the farmer, have technical information about the relative contributions of in frost water and then other irrigation water?
And the point I'm be making my evidence to just how well run and how modern the technology that's applied at the MacArthur Ridge development. So the vineyard manager, the farmer on that operation, knows exactly how much water and where that water's been applied. And there are then a range of technologies and approaches that are applied to understand when the irrigation needs to be applied. So looking at soil moisture, so that's measured on a regular basis. So you see when that a slug of water has been applied for frost protection appears on the soil moisture measure, and Murray, who's the farmer, is watching that till it gets to a trigger point, and then he will initiate his irrigation once the soil level moisture levels get to a trigger point to then initiate his irrigation.
So very much an integrated approach.
It is very much integrated.
Okay. Well, thank you for that explanation. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you. Any questions arising? No questions. So thank you very much for your evidence. We'll take the morning break.
Please all stand.